everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 79. I am your host, Dr. Vankman, and let's introduce our panel, shall we? Mazer. Hello, Mazer.
Yes.
You're here, right?
I am present. I am in this moment with everyone. I'm glad we're all connected.
Zen.
Great. Let's... We're coming off a 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was actually the easiest 4th of July. I was able to see fireworks at the Rose Bowl, and I was able to leave the house and within 45 minutes see fireworks and get out of there in about 30 minutes.
Wow, that is impressive.
Yeah, and I had a straight shot view of the Rose Bowl, so it was pretty cool. Nice. I'll have to tell you about it later, how I did that.
All right. Ben P. is with us. Hello, Ben.
How's it going, Dr. Vankman?
Great. How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was good. We were hanging out with some friends. P. Vader and I went up to Mulholland Drive, that outlook over, over the top of Mulholland Drive, because they were having some sort of Philharmonic Orchestra was playing at the Hollywood Bowl with country legend Vince Gill, and we didn't get to see any of that, but they were having a fireworks show right afterwards, so we were just kind of camping out up top for a little bit and watch the fireworks and all that stuff, and pretty cool spot. If anybody's in LA, I highly recommend checking out the Mulholland Drive kind of outlook next year, just because it's spread out, you can see like the whole city, and there's a bunch of fireworks going on, obviously, in every aspect of it, so if you're in LA, check that out.
Sweet. Now that brings us to P. Vader, and so you were with Ben on this little fireworks adventure?
Yeah, just refer to Ben for my 4th of July comments.
Now I have a question. How late were you there on Mulholland Drive?
That was probably close to 9, probably. Yeah.
You left around 9? All right. Well, yeah. If you would have stayed till midnight at the top of Mulholland Drive, legend has it, you will see a ghost carriage.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait,
ghost carriage.
Are you being serious right now?
Yeah, me and Vankman have actually, me, Vankman, and R.P. McMurphy have gone out and attempted this. But the thing is, we couldn't actually verify that it was the tallest point on Mulholland. So.
Is this just for the 4th of July, or is this all every day?
This is every day.
What?
Well, every night.
Every night
at midnight.
Huh. Interesting.
That's the legend.
Should check it
Whether
out.
It's true or not, I don't know.
Cool.
So, that leaves us with Bob Neek.
What a do, nephew.
Oh, not much. You know, just doing.
Cool.
Do. How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was banging.
yes.
Did you say you were banging? What?
Yeah. No. It was really cool. It was nice and mellow.
Good. This 4th of July weekend was actually probably one of the most kickback, mellow 4th of July weekends I've ever had.
Yeah.
I really didn't do much, to be honest. You know, just kind of stuck around and went to a classic car show down the street from where I live. Checked out some awesome hot rods. I actually put pictures up of it, of some of the cars, up on the blog within a blog.
Nice.
So if you want to check those out, hit them up. And then we went and we live up near a mountain, so we just kind of went up to this point in the mountain where we just kind of watched the fireworks from up there, from kind of all around the valley. So it's nice. Pretty cool. So that's what I did.
Nice. Cool.
So we're going to talk about some box office numbers. We're going to do our annual, which is becoming an annual, This Week in Box Office History. We always have fun doing. We are going to talk about movies that we've seen this week. Not much came out. We talked about Last Airbender last week, and so I'll talk a little bit about Eclipse. Shut up. And Red Dead Redemption. Both Mazer and I finally got the game, and we're playing it now, and it's incredible. And then we're just going to talk about Close Encounters, because I didn't know. I watched it this weekend, so I don't know if Mazer did.
Mazer lent me and P. Vader his copy, so we watched it. So I just wanted to talk to you guys about it for a little bit.
Awesome. All right, and then we're just going to talk about some geek news, like BioShock being rated R, James Bond 23 being dead, Titanic 3D, and we're going to just briefly talk about the recent Conan photos that have come out that just are just terrible. So, I think they are anyway. I don't know. We'll talk about it later, and I'll get everybody else's opinion. So let's roll through the top five of this last weekend. Obviously, number one, the Twilight Saga Eclipse made $83.6 million. So the budget on that movie was $68 million, so they've already made their money back. And so far, the total gross for the film is $176.3 million. So, you know, it's Twilight. What can you say? Everybody went and saw it. Well, not everybody, but obviously a lot of people. Number two, The Last Airbender came in at $51.8 million. That had a budget of $150 million, so it's not making its money back anytime soon. Toy Story 3 came in third at $43 million. That's in its third week in a row, so it's still hanging in there strong. We've got Grown Ups that came in at number four at $26 million. Number five, Night and Day, $14.1 million. So it was a pretty good money-making weekend at the box office. So congratulations to the studios that made money. Now, for this week in box office history, The Boys wanted to go back to 2005, 4th of July weekend. Let's just do this. Okay. Like we do every time. Everybody, let's go around. Everybody pick a movie they think is on the top 10 list. And we'll go from there. So, who wants to start? 2005, 4th of July weekend.
I'll kick us off, Venkman, because I kind of suggested the year. I feel like I could guess one here. So, if I'm wrong, I'm going to be a little disappointed in myself. But I'm going to go with The Da Vinci Code.
Man, nope.
No!
Not on the top 10. Shit.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I suck, bro.
No, The Da Vinci Code is not on the list.
Someone has to redeem me because that was pitiful.
Okay, I'm just going to throw out Transformers.
And you would be wrong, sir. His Transformers is not in the top 10.
I want to say that was 2007.
That was 7?
07, maybe, yeah. Well, I'm not going to do any better. I was living in Russia at 05, so I'm going to have to say Chorny Boomer was in the... I'm going to go with Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Okay. Nice. It's on the top 10. It is number 3 on the list.
I got
nicely
one.
Done.
Got one.
I suppose that leaves me. I'm gonna guess The Island.
Nice.
Ooh.
No, there's no The Island in the top 10.
It must not have come out yet.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys are probably gonna kick yourself in the asses after I tell you.
Oh, we know.
Oh, I'm sure. That's
probably Harry Potter and
honestly,
pirates.
It's more
see,
insulting.
See, you're already way off.
No?
You're so wrong.
Cinderella Man.
Cinderella Man. National Treasure.
Cinderella Man.
All right, Vangman. Take us to school. Yeah. Take us to school.
Okay, here we go. You ready for this?
The third
4th of July weekend, 2005. Number one, Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. $77 million on its opening weekend.
I never would have guessed.
You should have guessed that.
I saw that on 4th of July, too.
Then you should have known better.
I should have.
Number two, Batman Begins.
No.
Ooh, come on.
Right? Easy.
I think it's in 2004. I don't know why, but for some reason I place it in 2004. That's,
in its third week in the row, it made $19.3 million. Number three, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, 12.7.
Nice.
Number four, Bewitched.
$11 million.
Number five, Herbie Fully Loaded.
I knew that one.
That was in the top 10? Good lord.
I know, right? $10.7 million. Number six, Madagascar. And its sixth week in a row was brought in 6.7. Number seven, Rebound. It was in its opening weekend, $6 million. Number eight, Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, wow. Huh.
In its seventh week in a row, made $5 million. Number nine, The Longest Yard, $4 million. And number 10, George A. Romero's Land of the Dead.
Wow, that's surprising.
Rounds out the top 10, $3.2 million, 4th of July weekend, back in 2005. So there you have it, folks. That's this week in box office history.
I'm ashamed.
You should be. You should be ashamed. You picked the year.
I did.
And you saw War of the Worlds on 4th of July.
Oh, man.
Okay. So, real quick, I don't want to go. You guys can just shoot off questions at me or whatever. I don't want to go into any detail. I don't even want to admit.
All right. So you've seen Eclipse.
Isabella Swan, I promise to love you every moment forever.
She's still human. The Volturi don't give second chances.
Why are you so against me becoming like you?
I know the consequences of the choice you're making. After a few decades, everyone you know will be dead.
You wouldn't have to change for me, Bella. I'm in love with you, and I want you to pick me instead of him. You have to consider the idea that I might be better for her than you are.
You don't know what you're getting yourself into.
I'm gonna fight for you until your heart stops beating.
What was your favorite shirtless Jacob moment?
He was shirtless through the whole film.
So you're saying it was all your favorite?
Yes. No, I'm telling you, like, every scene he was in, he did not have a shirt on.
No, I think the female fans would be greatly disappointed if he wasn't.
He's out in the snow. It's snowing. It's cold. Bella is freezing her ass off, and he's out there without a shirt on. Perfectly fine.
Were girls screaming the whole time, or is it just
the first time? Just the first time.
No, I went to a local theater. I didn't go to one of the bigger ones. I went one closer to the house. So it wasn't crowded at all. So we didn't get a lot of the screaming fans in there. It was a slow movie, though. I mean, there was way too much talking with bad dialogue and bad acting. And the action sequences, though, were actually pretty cool. You could definitely see the influence that David Slade had in the film. It was probably the best-looking film out of three that have been made so far. So, I mean, he did the best he could with what he had. He did it for the money, so...
Did you see Hard Candy, Dr. Brinkman?
I did. I loved Hard Candy.
That was a great film.
I liked it, too.
Yeah, great movie. I even liked 30 Days of Night. I know a lot of people didn't, but it's just...
Yeah, I was probably
one of those
people.
It was just a fun, blood-soaked vampire film that, you know, I like horror movies, so...
Well, for me, it missed the biggest part, and it wasn't even scary.
Well, you know, whatever.
And the gore was kind of tame, so...
It was over the top.
Well, over the top in terms of ideas, but not really.
It was all dark.
Yeah, it was really dark.
Yeah, it was very dark. But you know,
I think I get more out of a video game visually
There is a Twilight video game, right? There has to be, right?
I honestly don't even know.
Press X to remove shirt.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the acting was terrible. The script was awful. The action sequences were bearable. David Slay did the best he could with what he had to work with. I mean, he literally was... Yeah. I mean, and I talked to some friends that know David Slade, and he was telling them, you know, first of all, he did take the gig because it, you know, he needed the money. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he did it for the money. And
who's not? Really?
But he said, you know, one of the interesting things that he told them was that Stephanie Meyer was a very like strong force on the set. Like she would come on set and tell him how to do certain scenes. She would go in there and I guess there was one scene where they were doing there was like a love scene in there, and she said that it wasn't sexy enough and that he had to sex it up a little bit more. And he was kind of, and I saw the film, but I didn't really see any of that, but maybe they edited it down. But what he told my friends is that he made a softcore porn. And that the funny part was it came from, you know, this girl who wrote these Twilight books, who's Mormon, who told him to make them more sexy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To sex it up. So I thought that was interesting. Hmm. But,
well, yeah, you know, there's that whole history of David Slade where he announced on Twitter that he would rather, like, what was it? That he would rather shoot himself than watch a Twilight movie. And then when he ended up getting the gig, he had to delete his Twitter account because he didn't want people seeing it. But, of course, the internet and all its wisdom and glory sucked that up and then and reported on it and everything. There was this big hubbub about it a while back.
I'm surprised he got the gig, you know, after saying that, but... You know, whatever. I guess they needed a director, and he needed the money. So
yeah.
How much did they whisper talk in this film?
Oh, I think everyone whispered the whole time.
Was it as bad as Jack Bauer in 24? Because he either whisper talked or shouted every line.
Jack Bauer did. Jack Bauer yelled whispered.
Yelled whispered.
Invented a new form of communication.
You can't do that!
It's like he's loud, but he's angry, but he doesn't want to wake up his mom. He perfected it.
But yeah, so...
So would you recommend Twilight... Or, I'm sorry, Eclipse to people...
I would recommend it to the Twilight fans, okay. But they've all seen it already, so... Yeah.
They don't need your recommendation at this
point. As for any of our readers, I do not recommend it. Okay. Unless you're a Twilight fan. So, whatever.
In which case, you're wholly unsatisfied by our coverage, or lack thereof, of all things Twilight-related.
Well, yeah, we post a couple things, but, you know.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, you know. They have websites that do all that Twilight stuff, so...
Yeah.
They're not coming to us.
It's called moviesblog.mtv.com.
Yeah, there you go. Now, both Mazer and I recently got the video game Red Dead Redemption. And this game is just awesome. Just want to briefly talk about it. What are you thinking, Mazer? You on board with this game? You having a good time playing
it? Yeah, it's probably the most immersive and, I would say... I love westerns, and especially the spaghetti westerns, and this just captures everything so perfectly. But I think that's just in the story things. But I think something that they've done that I've never really seen done to this level is the passage of time, and it's all set in the desert, and how a desert looks at night is completely different than how a city does, and they captured it.
Dude, it's a
perfectly.
Beautiful game. It's a beautiful game. The art, design, everything is just incredible. And every time I play it, I'm just blown away and I'm captivated by everything that's put on the screen. And on top of that, the characters and the story are just so rich. And, you know, you get to meet these different types of people. And, you know, you're told these different stories, in this game. And it's amazing because the stories are really good, you know?
Yeah,
And, you know, going from story to story or mission to mission or whatever is just really engaged. And it's hard. Once you start playing, it's hard to stop because you could go on forever.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so much. For me, this is so much more interesting than the. I mean, Rockstar is the one who did Red Dead Redemption, and they, you know, famous for doing Grand Theft Auto. And
yeah.
I mean, this has those same mechanics, and they have shops, and they have gunsmiths.
But it fits everything so perfectly, and it's taken to a whole new level. I mean, Grand Theft Auto, it is fun, but it's honestly like it's. Not up to the same caliber that Red Dead Redemption is. I mean, they really went all out and something amazing with this game.
I think Grand Theft Auto relies on crude humor and sex jokes and, you know, violence jokes and violence as a way of keeping you interested in the story. This doesn't have any of... I mean, this does
I find it very interesting, you know, because you're like, you're in the Old West, you're meeting up, you know, there's whores all around and stuff like that. And you can, you know, it's like when these prostitutes try to, like, entice the main character, the guy that you play, he is like, you're barking up the wrong tree, ma'am, I'm married, you know? He's like, you know, this guy has, as much as a badass as he is, this guy has, like, morals, you know?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. You know, to see that they gave the main character morals in an Old West where morals really just could be thrown out the window.
Yeah. And something I like in this is the random encounters that you have in the video game feel far more natural than in Grand Theft Auto. Because you'll run into people who need help, you have someone who's being chased by wild animals, you'll have people challenging you to a duel. There's this whole mechanic in it there's a fame and honor, which are two separate things. And honor can point you in two different directions if you want to go the good guy route or the bad guy route. And each one, I guess, has its pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
And the fame, it just goes up no matter what you do. So, just as long as you're doing something cool. But I just love the mechanics there's a few different things in it where, like, it has you, you know, finding out, there's, like, a survival, there's different challenges, there's a survivalist, there's sharpshooter, and, I'm missing the third or fourth one. But it's really cool because instead of those feeling like these are kind of things that you kind of want to do later or maybe just do a little bit of, like, you want to go out and hunt so you can, A, work on how to shoot, B, because it's cool to find out where the certain animals are, and then C, so you can get more money to buy cooler weapons, because you really don't have any other way to make more money. For me, I mean, even with all those game mechanics, for me, the biggest part is that passage of time in the desert, and the weather effects and everything. Because when you see a sunset, when it's rain, you know, when it's kind of drizzling and stuff, it looks really, really cool. But when it's just a clear sky, I mean, I don't know what they've done, if they have some kind of dynamic engine, because it's completely seamless. You'll go through a 24-hour day-night cycle, and I think maybe about 3 hours or so. But it happens so subtly that you don't even perceive it until you realize, oh, wow, that looks really amazing. Just like when you're out hiking, you just go, oh, wow, this sunset looks really cool. You didn't even think about it.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely recommend this game to anyone that owns a gaming system and is able to play it.
Yeah, it's on everything, right?
Yeah, it's on everything, so you might as well just go out and buy it because it's pretty awesome. So
I'm hoping they come out. I mean, they've with Grand Turismo, Grand Theft Auto 4, they came out with several different alternative storylines and downloadable. I'm not anywhere near finishing this game yet, but I'd like to keep going when I finish, and hopefully they come out with more downloadable content.
I got a quick question before you guys wrap up this little conversation. How is the multiplayer? Have you played, have you experimented with that?
I haven't even done it.
Yeah, I haven't even played it yet.
I'm sure it's pretty cool.
I'm just so engulfed in playing just the story mode of the game that, yeah, when I'm done with that, then I'll go in and start doing multiplayer stuff. Maybe I'll give it a try. I don't know.
I hear there's actually a multiplayer storyline with two characters. I'm interested to check that out. So we'll probably have to play.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, definitely both recommend it, highly recommend it. So go out and get yourself Red Dead Redemption if you haven't already, because you're going to love it. So this week, Ben P. and P. Vader saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind recently. This was your first time watching it, is that right?
It was, yep.
All right, now I've seen this movie countless times. This is a movie I grew up on. I happen to end up watching it again this weekend myself. But, you know, what did you guys think? Hit us up. What are your thoughts?
I'm almost, like, afraid to say anything. But,
Then don't say anything. That doesn't sound good.
I'll just kind of start by saying the movie felt dated to me, I guess, but I don't know. I'm watching it from kind of a weird way. Like, Ben will probably agree with me in that stuff that you see in this movie, you see everywhere else now, but it originated in that movie.
Yes.
So, just watching it backwards was probably the wrong way. Like, watching it, having, like, the knowledge I have now of movies was probably the wrong way of going about watching this one.
Probably. At the same time, though, when I watch it, I still enjoy it.
Really?
But yeah. maybe that's because this is a movie I grew up on. I remember, like, I have that, I guess, the nostalgia feel.
Yeah.
You know, of being a kid and watching this movie for the first time. You know, those memories kind of flood back when I watch it. So maybe that's one of the reasons. But, you know, like, when I watch it, I still think that this film has stood the test of time. That it's you know, as much as we've come with technology and everything like that, I feel everything is just so fleshed out and done so well. On top of that, the acting and the story are great. You know, this is just a classic story about aliens.
Really? I felt the story was just boring, to be honest with you. To be, like,
wow,
as honest as I can.
Well, that's pretty honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say I grew up watching this, and I bought it, and I obviously lent it to Ben and to Vader here. I rewatched each. There's, like, three editions on this particular Blu-ray. There's the theatrical, then there's the special edition, which has an extended ending, and then there's the director's cut, or whatever his redo, and it actually has less of than all of them, and I think it has just a little bit at the beginning, but or maybe not. But in any case, it's his particular definitive edition, and even through all of the storyline and this, you have Richard Dreyfuss and his madness for this particular, trying to figure out what this is. I feel like at the time this movie came out, I remember seeing it, this was a really cool adventure. But we've seen now movies that have done, I think, Obsession better. But something that I have not seen, and I've seen people, they have tried to recreate this type of feeling, is that music melody moment in Close Encounters, where we are communicating with aliens through music. And I haven't seen a moment like that on screen where you have this kind of mankind reaching into something higher and communicating with it through a way, through technology and stuff like that. There's been other things that have tried to recreate that feeling, but I don't think anyone's touched it. And I think that's the reason it's timeless. And especially since I believe Spielberg thought of that sequence and then worked backwards on how do we get there.
Yeah. Well, that's the way, like, you know, movies should be made is you make sure you have an ending and you write the movie toward that ending that you've come up with. And I think it's worked for him for that, but you know.
I tend to side more with P. Vader on this one just because I came at it with the same kind of knowledge, you know, with the same kind of, like, for example, one scene I pointed out to him right after we saw it was there's a scene in the movie where there are screws in a air conditioning duct or whatever on the ground that become unscrewed, and like the aliens are kind of surrounding this house or whatnot, and the screws come unscrewed and like pop out, and the air conditioning duct pops open, and we've seen that done many times before, and yeah, just a lot of these. The movie is very influential, and especially in a lot of sci-fi, a lot of different sci-fi, not just alien movies, but even in something, you know, like supernatural horror films and stuff like that. I feel like it has some influence there as well, but and I'm certainly not doubting the influence of it, but just as far as also not being able to have that experience of seeing it as a kid, because it's a very discovery related movie. It's a very exploration heavy film. Like, those are a lot of the themes that run throughout it, and Richard Dreyfuss's character almost becomes a kid when he becomes so obsessed with this thing and like is building it at his house with no regard to his family's thoughts of him or whatever. Like, he just becomes so obsessed with it. It's almost childlike, really, when you consider his kind of obsession. But not having that experience with it as a kid, I don't think I related to it as well as I would have if I had seen it, you know, when I was 10 or 11 years old or whatever. Sitting back and watching it now, you just see it from more of like a structural standpoint of like, okay, here's the MacGuffin, like that he's trying to get to this thing. And like, we're watching it, and Pete Vader goes, Richard Dreyfuss's character is kind of constructing this mountain, this Devil's Peak or whatever,
Devil's Tower,
constructing it various times throughout the film through, you know, mashed potatoes and cream, like shaving cream and all this stuff. And like, he was getting ready to do it again, and Pete Vader like chimes up from the side of the room, and he's like, he's gonna build the cone shape thing again. We freaking get it. Like, come on. You know, and so, like, some of those things, I understand that they were really kind of hammering home. And I thought Spielberg maybe, with the ending, got a little bit too self-involved, too, I don't know, just a little bit too wrapped up in himself. The ending, I understand it. And I liked it to some degree, but I thought it went on for, like, 10 minutes too long. I thought if they cut that, because it was probably, what, 25 minutes or something, that entire sequence with the aliens and the communication and stuff. I thought if you would have cut that scene in half, it would have been great. I just thought it dragged on way too long. And there's, like, a lot of interesting things that they did with language in the movie, where people are talking over each other all the time, and it's hard to understand what's going on. There's François Truffaut, who's like a famous French director from the French New Wave, appears as an actor in this, and like the only time he's ever played a character, I think, other than himself, which was, you know, kind of strange to see. But you can't understand him when he talks in the movie. Like, you know, it's... But I think Spielberg did that on purpose. I think there's this language barrier in the movie that kind of mirrors the, you know, humans' language barrier with these aliens. And it's, I don't know, there are definitely some interesting themes running through it, some interesting visuals and things like that. The scenes were, I wouldn't say they're, like, tightly constructed, because there's, like, a lot of times where things just kind of ramble on. Overall, I don't know. I'd have to just rate it, like, if I were to rate it on, like, a 1 to 5 or something, I'd just throw it in the middle, just because, like, I hated aspects of it, but I really, really enjoyed other aspects of it.
What did you think of the, like, the very beginning of the film when they're in the desert and they're finding all of these?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about with the language thing. Like, you know, half of that is in Spanish, more than half of it probably is in Spanish. There's, like, other... you know, people just shouting and, like, dust blowing everywhere, and you're like, what is happening here? And which, even one of the characters goes, like, what the hell is going on? We watched the theatrical version.
Okay.
Yeah, even one of the characters in that scene goes, what the hell is happening? Like, I don't know what's going on. And I think Spielberg did that on purpose, just to kind of throw the audience in headfirst into this world, and, like, we don't know what's happening. Richard Dreyfuss doesn't know what's happening. So, like, there's a lot of interesting connections there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The movie, I just don't think it worked for me as well as it would have if I would have seen it as a kid.
I wish it would have.
Just to add something, it's hard to disconnect how influential this film is. Previous to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, everyone's encounters of an alien were of very different, various descriptions.
Yeah.
After Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out, all the aliens described looked like the aliens in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah.
So it's hard to detach how much influence this film has had on other films that have probably done parts of it better.
Yeah.
And
I mean, when I watched, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and then we see the trailer for that new J.J. Abrams movie coming out, that he said he was influenced by Spielberg on. It's like I'm watching, you know, you watch that trailer, Super 8, and it's like, there's so many, like, of those same elements.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of, you know, of what Spielberg did in that movie alone, you know?
Yeah. Like, and it going down so far as the detail of Dreyfuss's truck in the movie being onto a train track, and then the entire Super 8 teaser is all about a train. Yeah. So
I think it's probably in the same way that we view Psycho. There was no way for us to grow up watching Psycho.
Without knowing the ending.
Yeah, without knowing the ending. For us, it's not scary, and it's not this twist or anything.
Right.
And it's interesting, because at the end of that, they had to describe to an audience what multiple personalities was. This was not something people knew of.
Yeah.
So I think...
That's
I mean,
a really
now
good
it's
analogy.
Now it's something we take for granted. And
but
now,
at the same time...
Now we
like
just
I,
watch
I,
it for performance.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And
like,
we're still amazed
watch
by performance.
And
by the, you know, by the shots.
What it is.
But
yeah.
I think Close Encounters, I think it falls in the same thing, but it has, I think, some of the films in that era happen to not age very well.
Yeah.
That's
due to technology, I think, more than anything.
But even then, just looking at what they did with the effects for weather and things like that, which were a big part of the film.
Yeah.
With clouds and things like that.
Yeah, I
like,
mean, you see that in Ghostbusters, like, years later, like, the exact same effects.
But they didn't have CG to do this. They had to have multiple planes of water and other fluids, and they had to, you know, mix things in a special way so that it would look like clouds. Like, who has? I mean, I guess we could do that
even
now,
know how
but
to do that anymore?
Well, what's it, Darren Aronofsky did that for The Fountain. They had he worked with like a microbiologist or somebody, some sort of scientist, you know, making things in like petri dishes and stuff for effects. But that's like the closest. That's exactly what I thought of when I watched this. Was man, they had to actually, like, physically do those effects. They couldn't create them. And like, the spaceship stuff looked really good. There was a lot of all the special effects looked pretty well and, like, stood up,
The most detailed stuff, I think, ILM has done in terms of models. Because I think on the mothership, the amount of fiber optic cables, I think they have never replicated the amount that they've ever done.
Yeah, it looked like two upside down cities on top of a ship.
Yeah,
like, it was pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would recommend it to people if you kind of know what you're getting yourself into. I had never seen it before. I'd heard it's one of Spielberg's classics, and I'd only seen that one particular scene with Dreyfuss in the truck before. That was the only thing that I knew about the movie going in was just that. So, I don't know. I mean, if film fans need to see it just so you can kind of educate yourself and pick up on some of the,
know your sources.
Yeah, exactly. The source material for a lot of the influences that come after it. General audiences, I don't know. I'd still say probably give it a shot. You just have to kind of be prepared for a little bit more of a slow moving movie. The thing I was telling P. Vader after we watched it was that
the director's cut is quicker.
Okay. Yeah, that's right, because you said it cuts some out, which is surprising, because most director's cuts last longer.
Yeah, what he does is he makes his Dreyfuss's character less whiny and less detached and less
That sounds like an improvement.
And he also doesn't show the inside of the ship.
Okay.
Because he feels like that belonged to the audience and their imagination, and not for him to create.
Okay.
So.
But yeah, the thing I was telling P. Vader right after we watched it was I feel like this was a more personal project for Spielberg, because he wrote and directed it. You could definitely tell that, you know, you could just sense that sense of exploration kind of teeming through Dreyfuss's character, that you could kind of feel the same thing was going through Spielberg's mind at the time. Like,
and this is the type of Spielberg we want to see, but I think unless you're a writer, you only have so many stories you feel you have in you until you're making other people's material.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It'd be nice to see him. Yeah, War of the Worlds, we kind of had him coming back to Aliens, but it would be very cool if he did something. He's produced some television series things and stuff like that.
Well, there was also the other thing I was saying after watching it was, man, that's really strange that he would make two Alien movies in a very short period of time, because he did E.T., what was E.T., like 82, 83 or something like that?
82.
And so, but then right afterwards I was like, well, I guess it's not that strange, because Ridley Scott did two kind of historical epics within 10 years of each other, so it's really not, you know, that far out of the realm of believability, but I don't know. I thought it was decidedly average overall, so that's where I come down on it.
Alright. That's fair. Kind of. Alright, so why don't we talk about some of the movie news that has come out this week. Just really briefly touch on a couple things. It was announced this week that Titanic 3D would be coming out 2012 to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the sinking of Titanic. Now, this is one of those movies where I don't see why it had to be given a 3D treatment, especially after James Cameron came out and said 3D conversions suck and he's totally against them, but he's converting one of his movies, you know,
right,
into 3D. So, I don't know, what do you guys think?
Maybe he's developed something. ILM has their own proprietary dimensionalizing software. And perhaps James Cameron, with some foresight, is going, all right, they're going to keep doing some really crappy conversions. I just did a really great 3D film. And there's all these classic films that they want to keep converting, like Star Wars. It's probably the reason we've never seen a Star Wars in 3D yet, is the conversion process is not there yet. He's probably trying to develop new technology.
And that would explain why he's putting it so far off. Also, just the matter of coinciding with the 100-year kind of anniversary. But I think that time frame probably works out pretty well for it to be able to, A, see if 3D really is this kind of passing fad, which, for the record, I don't think it is. I think we'll definitely be seeing 3D, for a lot of years. And B, maybe the technology itself will, if Cameron himself doesn't improve it, maybe it'll just naturally evolve by the time 2012 rolls around.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question. Is this going to add to the box office totals of the original one? Or are they just going to, start considering new box office totals?
Yeah, how did they do it with the Star Wars special
edition? The Star Wars re-releases. Yeah, I'm not sure how that works. Do you know, Dr. Bingman?
The Star Wars stuff?
Yeah,
did they add that to the total, or did they treat those as separate films?
Yeah, I don't think they added to the box office totals.
Okay, because I was just trying to figure out if James Cameron's just trying to, beat himself again or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, as for the Star Wars 3D stuff, I don't know what's going on with that whole thing. I'm sure it'll eventually happen. When is totally different whole other question, because no one knows. So
I would say sooner rather than later, based on George Lucas's recent creative output. It doesn't seem like he's worried too much about content, and he's all about Flash and CGI and
now,
whatever.
Did we report something where he is thinking of using the Avatar technology
to convert, to do it Star in 3D. Wars?
Yeah, to basically take all their performances and redo them with CG characters. Now, this is, believe it or not, this is something we did on Geek Tyrant as an April Fool's joke, and it may, interestingly enough, be something that might actually be happening now.
That blows my mind.
Although I've been saying he's been wanting to do this since episode one came out. So,
yeah, definitely.
I can't even fathom that. I hope that doesn't happen, but who knows?
So, did you guys hear about BioShock? The whole thing that's going on with that. Gore Verbinski did an interview saying that he wants the movie to be like a hard R film, which makes sense to me. I mean, BioShock is a pretty violent, adult-oriented video game, so doing it as a rated R film totally makes sense.
It seems like you could do a PG-13 version, but why?
Yeah, exactly. If you want to,
it feels like it would be like a PG-13 Terminator.
Yeah, because how well would that work? That turned out.
I don't know. I've never played the game, so I don't really have much to say on the matter, other than the fact that I kind of wish Verbinski was directing it instead of just producing it. But
yeah, the reason behind that, for those of you who don't know, is he was attached to direct it at first, and then Universal's like, well, we got to cut back on the budget. We can't film it here in the States. We're filming it out of state. We're going to another country. And Verbinski's like, I don't want to leave my family. You know, I got other projects that I'm working on, stuff like that. I don't want to leave the country to do it. So he dropped out as director and was replaced by the guy that directed 28 Weeks Later.
Yes.
I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
It's like Juan Carlos. Yeah. I don't recall
what else
his
has he
last
done?
Name. But
what?
28 Weeks Later is like his big one. I'm not sure of his other work.
Okay.
Yeah. But, it's cool that he's producing and that he still has this vision for it. I hope it ends up the way he wants it to. Because, having played the video game, being a fan of the BioShock franchise, I think going rated R, being able to add all that blood and, all the blood and crazy, scary stuff in it would be worth it. It worked, it worked for Silent Hill. I mean, they didn't hold back at all on the Silent Hill video game or movie adaptation.
But that didn't do too well in the box office, I don't think it did too well in the box office,
but at the same time, for me, I think that Silent Hill is probably one of the best video game adapted movies out there right now. I think that they took the video game and did a fantastic job putting that on the big screen. That's just my opinion.
I haven't seen Silent Hill, so I can't chime in on that.
It'll mess you up, friend.
Yeah, it's pretty messy. It's pretty crazy. They actually did do a pretty good job. I was hoping for a sequel, and it does have the...
They're talking about a sequel, which I hope they do.
I think it's just because the film was actually done very well.
Yeah.
And even though the ending was very abstract for normal audiences, I think it was definitely a film that left you unbelievably creeped out.
Yes.
Which is what the game did every time you played it.
I mean, it's just the visual. I mean, they took the visuals from the game and did a fantastic job recreating that for the film. You had this scene with those nurses. There's some pretty crazy stuff. If you haven't seen the movie and you watch it, just be prepared for, insanity and bloodshed.
Nice.
But yeah, so I kind of hope that... I mean, BioShock isn't as bad as Silent Hill, but it still has those very creepy elements to it that would just, if done right, will make for a fantastic movie.
Cool. Well, speaking of insanity and bloodshed, do you want to talk about the Conan photo?
Gosh, do I? I guess. I mean, if you've read the site, I'm not a big fan of this new Conan movie that's being made right now by Legendary Pictures. It's just, it just looks, everything I've seen, every photo I've seen just looks awful. Yeah. What's the guy's name? Jason
Momoa, I think.
Momoa?
Yeah.
He is so wrong for that part. And I'm not saying that it has to be another Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, I think he's,
that sounds like what you're saying, Dr.
I think
Rickman.
Jason is just too young somehow.
No, I mean,
he doesn't have the I can see him killing five guys with his bare hand, but not, you know, 50.
See,
that's
I can't,
what Conan needs to do.
I can't see him killing one guy with his bare hands, Mazur.
No.
I just
can see
can't.
Five. I can see five, but not 50.
No.
Oh. It's been a long time since I've seen those Conan the Barbarian films.
I forgot how long ago, but I did see some Conan, and it has aged terribly, I've got to say. It is not... Memory is probably not as good as the film. I would say revisit Conan and see how bad the sets were. And how bad the makeup was, and how goofy Arnold
that's
is.
That's why it's kind of fun to watch.
I was talking to Alan Trehearn, the writer who writes This Week in Comics for Geek Tyrant, and he was talking to me about Conan the Barbarian and stuff. This was a while back, right when the new casting came out of Jason Momoa, and he was talking about how, because he had recently just seen the two Conan movies, what was it, Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer, I think, are the only two. And then he was, like, talking about the same thing, like, yeah, it looks terrible, and, like, the sets are awful, but it's, like, so decidedly 80s that it has this incredible charm to it that, like, you need that. You need to recreate that. Like, that is as much a part of the character and all the rest of the stuff as everything else. He was suggesting that, kind of ludicrously, that if you were to remake the movie, that you should do it with 1980s film technology, like regress in technology to recapture the movie on film, just to kind of get that same vibe out of it, like technology-wise. Which, I don't know, I feel like somebody somewhere will do that at some point, you know,
yes.
With like movies like House of the Devil, which I haven't seen, but I've heard are... did you see House of the Devil, Dr. Rickman?
Yeah.
You know, it's
people,
supposed to be just
a lot
like
of people
a super...
didn't like it. A lot of people thought it was slow, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, like this super slow burn 80s movie that really feels like it came out of the 80s. I think somebody might actually save the cameras from the 90s to film. You know, it sounds like
VHS.
something that the Expendables Stallone would have done with the Expendables. You know, film the Expendables with the technology from like 1991 or something like that. But I don't know. That's totally off the point, I guess, at this point. We've digressed so far away from it.
I don't have a problem with Conan being remade or rebooted or whatever. I just ask that they cast the right people.
I think what it is,
maybe the story will be good, though. You know,
it's Legendary Pictures, dude. They've got a pretty solid track record.
They do have a solid track record. But, I don't know. I can't say I'm holding off judgment because I've been pretty judgmental just off the photos. But I'm waiting for a trailer, you know?
Yeah.
I got to see a trailer because these photos, these still shots of Conan are just – they just look silly to me.
Hey, but
like,
they've got too much color and they don't have enough contrast. It's got to have some – it's got to have some more edge into it. It's got to have that 310 to Yuma – kind of feel that they did for Westerns, but they need to bring that kind of modern grit to Conan.
See, I'm afraid this is going to end up looking like Prince of Persia and being kind of like the same type of movie.
It's got too much color, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's going to be more of a live-action cartoon.
I feel like it'll be lit that way because Marcus Nispel's directing it, and he did
the
13th remake and stuff, so it, coming from that school of...
polish
music videos.
Michael Bay's product Platinum Dunes, where all those movies kind of look the same. It's like a Bruckheimer like school, you know, where all of Bruckheimer's movies are lit the same way. They all look like National Treasure or whatever,
exactly.
You know? I hope that Marcus Nispel doesn't carry those same sensibilities over into this movie. Although I'm not, and never have been or claim to be a huge Conan the Barbarian fan, so this one's kind of flying low on my radar. But
Well, I've read a couple of the books, you know, a few of the books, and I've enjoyed them. And
well, wasn't the casting of Jason Momoa supposed to represent more of the direction of how the character was captured in the books? Is that not the case?
Yeah, I still don't see it.
Okay.
I still just, I don't think
he's... You probably have Arnold too solidly burned into your mind.
No, I'm not saying that it has to be Arnold.
Arnold is always solidly burned into my mind. Yeah.
I just, I don't know.
So would you like Carl Umbri instead? Or, I mean, no, who would you rather have?
Taylor Lautner?
Yeah, Taylor Lautner.
Well, they might as well have cast they might as well have cast him.
Wow, that's an insult to Jason Momoa. Yeah. He would not stand for that if he was here.
Yeah, having seen him in a few things, I don't think he has the acting chops of, say, a Russell Crowe. But he's definitely not a Taylor Lautner.
Nobody is.
Oh, well.
I love how he's the standard
for bad. Let's wait for the trailer and see what happens.
And shirtless.
Yeah. Once the trailer hits, we'll know a lot more.
Yeah.
So
one more last comment. Not that I always have to get the last word in or anything, but you had made a comment about seeing the pictures and then waiting for the trailer, and I think we've all kind of settled in that same judgment category for Thor. Like, those first pictures didn't really do much for us, I think, right? Am I speaking accurately for everybody?
I'm on board.
To me, the Thor images that I've seen so far, other than the first official photo.
Right, yeah, exactly.
The concept all art feel very
just weird.
Costumey.
Yeah, so I think we're all kind of waiting
something
for
it that was great. Thor, something they are going to be wearing costumes.
Something that was great about Spider-Man, it didn't seem like a costume. It felt like a personality that was being put on. Iron Man was a functioning suit, and Hulk was a mutation. Thor looks like a costume.
Yeah, so we'll wait and see what the trailer...
Oh, and Captain America, it looks like an actual, you know, propaganda uniform.
And hopefully with Comic-Con this year, we'll get to see some footage from Thor, and we'll get, you know, they've done a lot of filming on it. I'm sure they're going to splice together some...
Yeah.
A Comic-Con trailer for everybody, so...
Guaranteed.
It's definitely going to be something to look forward to.
If they're already promoting it on Entertainment Tonight, that means there's quite a bit already shot that they're
going to... Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, while I move on, just real quick, MGM, you know, financial problems, that whole thing. James Bond, you know, the 23rd film is dead, apparently. Film is not being made. Sam Mendes was set to direct it. It doesn't look like this movie is moving forward anytime soon.
So did his deal expire? Did he walk away from the project?
I think he's definitely looking at other projects to do. I don't know if he's completely... they've killed the project, so whatever he was working on is gone.
Okay.
I don't think he's doing it anymore. Gotcha. I'm not even sure whether or not Daniel Craig is going to be on board with Bond after this, because who knows when it's going to get made. I mean, MGM is like shot themselves in the foot, and they're screwing up all these franchises.
And they're not going to let go of Bond and let someone else do it.
Yeah, they're not going to let go of Bond, and it's like, you know, I don't know. It's really frustrating to see the studio, you know, go through this. They should just sell off the rights to their stuff, to their properties, and just, you know, call it quits, because they're so far in the hole right now that I just don't see how they're going to pull themselves out. And now they're just taking all these movies that should be being made down with them.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's disrespectful to the fans. Just say how it is, all right?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's their own fault for not making good movies.
I feel like if they sold off the rights to The Hobbit, I'm basing that off of the Bond is probably, in the long run, would be more profitable for them. If they sold off The Hobbit rights, I feel like they could try and dig themselves out of the hole with that and then go back to trying to do stuff with Bond franchise.
Yeah, even with The Hobbit, I mean... in a recent interview, on a New Zealand morning talk show, Ian McKellen came out and was like, look, I'm not waiting around for it. You know, he's like, I'm letting the producers know that this is something I'm not waiting around for. So if this movie doesn't get made, he could end up getting another gig and not being able to play Gandalf in the next Lord of the Rings or the next Hobbit movie.
Yeah,
so,
that's the first kind of negative comment from him. I mean, not super negative,
yeah,
but negatively
toned. Yeah, he's always
been
pretty positive, yeah, saying, been... "Oh, we're going to shoot at this, you know, at this time."
Yeah.
I think that's when he's like, I think he's saying that because he's like, "That's when I can do it," you know. It's like that's when I'm giving this to, if that date passes and I'm saying that this movie's going to shoot. Then you guys are going to lose me. And that sucks.
Yeah. And it's not like he's a young actor who can wait around.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, if anyone's from MGM is listening, just
give it up.
Just give it up. You know, I'm sorry, but
yeah. Well, the reason they're in the problem they are now is they forgot about the fundamental thing, which is make good movies.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but now they're paying the price for, you know.
If Daniel Craig drops out, that's a huge. That's probably the biggest blow, I would say.
And you know, we don't know if that's what's going to happen. I mean, James Bond will eventually happen.
Yeah,
we will eventually see a James Bond movie, but who's you know, it'll probably be with a different director. And it, you know, like I said, it could happen with a different actor this time around. And who knows how long it will be before we see another James Bond film.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Sean Connery did a James Bond film
when he was
pretty old, so.
Well, he also did Never Say Never Again, which wasn't sanctioned under...
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Eon, like, that's not in the Bond repertoire. So I wonder if Daniel Craig might be able to make a Bond movie outside of MGM.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. I didn't even think about that.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's something to think about.
I think, is Bond even relevant anymore? Because, I mean, he was all about the Cold War, and are we in a Cold War? I mean, we could say abstractly, yeah, a few different countries, you know, in Asia, but...
I still love James Bond, especially the Daniel Craig James Bond, so I'm going to say he's still relevant.
I think Daniel Craig is relevant.
Yes, Daniel Craig as James Bond is relevant.
Nice.
All right, so how about we talk about movies coming out this next weekend? We've got Despicable Me.
Pass.
That is the CGI animated film with Steve Carell doing his thing with a weird voice and little minions, green minions. He's got...
Yellow.
I think they're yellow.
Yellow?
Are they yellow?
They're yellow.
You know, it's neon green.
They got
yellowish
two
green.
Eyes. Some have two eyes, some have one eye.
Whatever.
I think it'll be good for the kids, you know.
It'll be good. I don't think it's going to make Pixar kind of money, but...
This film, I feel like, couldn't decide what it was going to be, which is why in the teasers, there was nothing related to the story. And then we finally get something, and, oh, we have Gru, who's this villain. Oh, and we kind of have a peek at his father. Oh, and he kind of has minions, and he kind of has his plan. But, oh, he kind of has this arch-villain. Oh, and he has some kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff going on.
They couldn't decide what to do with this film.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It'll be good for the kids. If you got kids, then maybe you'll end up seeing it. I don't know.
You can't possibly predict what everyone with kids...
I would hope your children have good enough taste to go, this movie sucks.
Yeah
exactly, right? And then we have Predators, which is coming out this weekend. This is a movie that we're all pretty much looking forward to.
I am especially more than I was before after seeing that Walton Goggins is cast, realizing that he was cast in it. Because,
oh, you didn't know?
Well, I wasn't really a Walton Goggins fan because I've never seen The Wire.
The Shield?
I think it was in The Wire. He might have been in both, actually. After watching all of season one of Justified, he did fantastic work on Justified. So I kind of know who he is now because of that. And then I recently rewatched the trailer for some reason or something, and I was like, "Oh, holy crap, that's Walton Goggins!" So now I'm really excited about it.
So there you go. See,
Yeah, my expectations are still pretty low for this.
I'm excited.
I'm excited, but I don't want to poke too much, you know?
It's in a summer of terrible movies so far, I think you're probably going in with the right mindset.
Probably. I think I'm very overly excited. I think my expectations are set.
It's so hard to not get excited about something that looks remotely good.
I just wanted to see a good Predators movie because
I have an idea of where it's going to go, but it's an action film. It's not going to be,
No, it's going to be totally predictable. I'm not expecting anything to blow us away. I mean, we know what's going to happen. It's just a matter of, are they going to...
Is it
going to
be badass, basically?
Yeah, is it going to be badass?
Yeah.
So, I'm not expecting anybody to reinvent
There's no way it could be worse than the Alien versus Predator stuff.
Exactly, so. That's what I'm saying. It's like this is gonna be the best Predators film that we've seen in a long time. So,
yeah,
without having seen it, I just know it'll be better than all three Alien versus Predator movies.
Was there three?
Requiem was the second, but Predator 2. It'll probably be better than Predator 2 with Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Predator 2 was weird. what were they thinking?
So I think our pick of the week would be Predators, everyone?
Yeah, definitely.
Rock on. All right. Before we go through all this stuff, just thought I'd let you all know that GeekTyrant.me has launched. This is our shop. This is where you can go buy a t-shirt. We got one design now. It's a classic design, just has the classic Geek Tyrant logo on it. American Apparel fitted t-shirts, both girl cut and guy cut. So
guy cut?
Yeah. Keeping the alliteration alive.
Whatever. Guys, girls.
And Bob Neek is already working on some deals where we're going to deliver some more cool stuff.
Yeah,
we have t-shirts.
So yeah. Keep your eye on the store.
Yeah,
we've got some, right now we've just got the classic. We're going to every now and then we're going to add a new design on there, something a little different. Get some original art, artwork up there and stuff for you to check out and buy. So, definitely good times. Good things are happening. We are evolving. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, because you can listen to us on iTunes whenever you want. Fan us on Facebook at facebook.com/geektyrantfans, where we, post all our articles and you can interact with all the writers and stuff like that. So don't forget to do that if you haven't already. And then there's Twitter at geektyrant. So follow us on Twitter. Fan us on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes. And
just to add on the iTunes, help us out and leave a review.
Yeah, that helps bring up the kind of notoriety of the podcast.
But we don't have any reviews.
Well, it's just good for people to write and leave us comments, leave us reviews, rating system.
What can we do better? What's up, guys?
It takes 2 minutes.
Two minutes. See, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Or just write awesome and then give us 5 stars.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's super easy. Well,
just a simple suggestion. Save you 5 minutes of writing out how awesome we are. Just put awesome.
Now, one of the things about the t-shirts, we'll probably put a post on this just to remind everybody, but if you buy your t-shirts before Comic-Con, we're going to be at Comic-Con. If you see any of us, we'll all be wearing Geek Tyrant t-shirts while we're at Comic-Con. So if you see us in line or anything, we're all Geek Tyrant. So
maybe talk with us for a very long time.
Yeah, talk to us for a very long time. We got your back. There's benefits.
I'm sure we'll be standing in line for a very long time. Yeah. So we need people to talk to.
Yeah. So, that, and we're planning a meetup. We don't have the full details on our Comic-Con meetup yet, but we will get that out to you as soon as we know.
We are teaming up with
Think Hero.
ThinkHero.com,
yeah.
Good guys.
So, so we'll be doing that. And other than that, thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. And have a great night. Thank you, everybody.